You say there's no economic problem in America.
Young lady, we're going round and round with the cake of soap. I'm going to answer your question for you rather pointedly, and these are facts. Whether the good professor wishes to acknowledge this as a fact from where he sits in Red China or not, I don't know. But from the information that is available to the government and to the citizens through the press in the United States, the fact is that the average Chinese now receives one bar of washing soap a month. If he chooses to use it all in one day, that's all right with them.
Thank you.
But he gets one bar a month, every 30 days.
And he feels
one 12th of each year.
To the best of my knowledge, that is not a fact.
Well, to the best of your knowledge, you, Professor, are misinformed in spite of the fact that you live there.
It's very good to travel all these thousands of miles to come and sit here and talk to a man who's never been to China.
How do you know that?
All about
How do you know that? Have you had me checked out?
Is it true or is it not?
How do you know that?
Have you been to China?
How do you know?
Have you
You're making too many knowledgeable statements.
You are evading
All
the
right.
issue.
I intend to evade them just as you. And let me tell you one thing else. You said that I was indulging in McCarthyism-type tactics.
Perfectly true.
Is that so? And the purpose of which is to undermine your credibility.
Perfectly correct.
You can do that without any help from me. Your name...
Rick, I'm here again. My name is Ed Mendel.
All right.
My question to Professor Crook is, are you familiar or aware of the Red Guard movement
yes.
in China? Is it true that these young people are now conscripted for military service to go into North Vietnam as volunteers?
No, it's not true.
This is not a true statement?
No.
But is there a large number of these Red Guard youngsters?
There is.
Have you any idea of the number?
I would put it somewhere between 5 and 7 million. I can't be quite sure on that.
I believe that's correct. That's what I've heard. Is it true that they're moving into 20 million?
I doubt it, but who can tell about the future?
Are you familiar with their program to have large camps and work camps for the border between Russia and China?
No, I'm not. You see, even the United States government in Washington has never suggested that the Chinese have military forces in Vietnam. The Chinese, of course, are helping the Vietnamese with supplies and with weapons, but they have not moved in troops, and they are not planning, to the best of my knowledge, to move in Red Guards either. After all, if they wanted to move in anybody, they'd move in soldiers first, wouldn't they?
No, I would say that they would move in work forces. I believe this was the program as done under Hitler and the Strength Through Joy movement. I believe they substituted the rifle for the shovel and the pick and axe when they finally did move into positions.
Tell me, thank you, didn't the Red Guards recently protest against the president of mainland China?
You mean Liu Shaoqi?
Yes.
Yes.
Wasn't there a protest recently?
Now, I can see I'll have to enlighten you on
a
little.
Oh, please do.
As to how they do things in China. Since you won't tell me whether you've been there or not, I can only assume you haven't and you don't know. Now, it's perfectly true they have an institution in China called criticism and self-criticism, which gives the people there the freedom to criticize those in authority, including the president and including Mao Zedong. They exercise it. Now, if you read your New York Times, you would know that this has recently taken place. Now, surely you don't feel that the New York Times is an organ of the Chinese Communist Party, or perhaps you don't read it. I do. This was reported by the Canadian journalist David Oansia for the Toronto Globe and Mail and reproduced in the New York Times very recently.
May I butt in and ask just one question? You speak about this.
Exactly.
I'm sorry about this.
Got to
ask this question.
Go right ahead.
What about when the famous speech of Mao Zedong was given, which has been entitled around the world, Let 100 Flowers Bloom, when the intellectuals of China were invited to make their specific recommendations about the way the revolution was going? They accepted this on face value. They made their recommendations. A couple of months later, there weren't any intellectuals left to be able to open their mouth. How about that, sir?
There weren't any intellectuals left, you say. Are you suggesting, then, that China's development of nuclear weapons has been carried on by illiterates? Nonsense. Mao Zedong never made any such speech. They did not invite people to put forward their suggestions along the lines you have suggested. The 100 Flowers policy was a policy for the arts and sciences. The idea was to see that there should be a maximum amount of experimentation in form so that people shouldn't go along in the old rut. It has been misrepresented by people like yourself to mean that it gave people the right to advocate any sort of ism, capitalism, feudalism, fascism, and so on. It never gave them any such right. China is a socialist state, and nobody is allowed the right to act to overthrow it. But when it comes to policies in the arts and sciences, yes, they don't want people going along in the
Professor,
old ruts.
Professor, is everyone...
What about this poor chap here who wants to ask a question? Why don't you
is everyone misinformed, Professor? Does everyone misrepresent? Now I let him ask the
All
question.
Right.
My name is Frank Drew. I was wondering if you were familiar with the term ethnocentrism, Mr. Burke.
No, I'm not.
Well, it means taking your culture's worldview and applying it to the whole world. You see, you seem to be taking our values and applying them to a country where they don't exist. Now, I've sat here and I've heard people
You're
talk about...
You're referring to Mr. Burke or
Mr.
Me?
Mr. Burke, I'm referring to.
Oh, he's on your side.
Good, good. It's about
no,
time
no,
there
Mr.
was somebody
Burke,
on my side.
I'm not on anybody's side, but I have been studying sociology, and I've been trying to apply a little something that I learned. It may not be that much, I admit that, but... I sat here and I listened to people talk about how much soap they would use and about Christianity also. Now, these are values that are present in our society. They aren't present in the Chinese society. Now, do you think it's right that we should try to feel that everybody should feel the same way that we do? That
no.
Maybe these people may be different, their values may be different, their mores may be different?
Sociologically, you are 100% correct, sociologically, but I do not approve of any one group of men making slaves of a nation in view and in spite of what he says. Would you be interested in the facts, young man, that by word and deed, Red China has had its hand in the war in Vietnam. It has openly supported insurgency in the neighboring country of Thailand. It has exported its subversion as far away as Africa. And would you also be interested in knowing that for the very best soldiers, officers, who they wish to reward with a vacation, that these are sent to bask in the shores of Cuba? Did you know that?
Who, the Chinese?
Yes, Chinese Red officers are rewarded vacations in Cuba.
Can I make a point without trying to, you know...
As long as we do not have a classroom lecture on sociology, for one reason, if I may, and I will allow you. And the reason is this. The Bumblebee, in theory, on an aeronautical engineering design, cannot fly. But he doesn't know this, so he flies anyway. Okay?
Fine.
I don't want theory. I want to know about thousands of people killed because of the Red Chinese. I want to know about the shackles. Don't give me this routine of they used to pick the corpses up off the street. Of course
they
did.
Are you denying it?
Of course I'm not denying
it.
But this, they also had the bubonic plague in Europe.
Right.
I can't deny that either, but certain progress has been made, hasn't it? So let us separate, young man. You're academic and scholastic training in sociology from the facts as they exist.
Well, I'm only, let's say, competent to speak in theory, and I don't feel I can carry
this
discussion.
We are not discussing theory. Thank you. All right, step forward.
Mr. Burke, Professor, my name is Ernie Bonifazio. Now, you claim Red Chinese people are free, yet you stated before that they're cracking down on the intellectuals that disagree with the new China. Now, what type of freedom is that?
I think I've already explained that. It seems to me that Mr. Burke is the one who's just been cracking down on the intellectuals. He won't let this poor sociologist get a word in. Now, and Mr. Burke is also the one who talks about my defending slavery, and yet he obviously upholds the rights of the slave owners in Tibet. There's all, you know, as Mao Zedong says, there are contradictions in everything, and there are a lot of them over here.
It's interesting to note that you would quote Mao Zedong instead of any of the great statesmen of England, the country to which you still belong.
I'm an internationalist. Nothing to be ashamed of in that, Mr. Burke.
You have the freedom to disagree with our government. It seems to me that those people either do what they're told or they're going to be cracked down on. That's the
No, I'm afraid you're twisting what I said. I said that in present-day China, they are making education open to greater numbers of people who come from the families of the former peasants and workers. This is expanding the whole group of the intellectuals. This is not cracking down on the intellectuals. It is providing an education to people who never had it before.
Were you there when the old China government was in...
Yes, I was.
And what did you think of that? You were all for that, too, or...?
It's not a question of thinking. I know that very, very few people in China had any education at all. They couldn't afford to go to school.
Excuse me. Mr. Burke, you wouldn't accept that gentleman's opinion before. Would you accept President Kennedy's opinion about the same subject, about American wills? President Kennedy said before his death, this is a quote by President Kennedy, he said, "We must face the fact that the United States is neither omnipotent or omniscient, that we cannot always impose our will on the other 94% of mankind, that we cannot right every wrong or reverse each adversity, and that therefore there cannot be an American solution for every world problem."
Bravo! And well, I believe I told, just a moment, I believe I told that young man that I did not agree that China should become a Christian nation. I don't believe that we should impose our mores, our moral standards, or any of our culture on a nation that has nothing to do with us in an ethnic sense, but has
what
its own
Vietnam?
Culture. Just a moment, Professor. I don't believe that this country has the moral right to do that. But we do have, as human beings, the moral right to see to it that they have the freedom of choice themselves and they're not puppets.
But you equate our value judgments with theirs. And how could you do this?
No,
completely
I do not, young
society,
man. You're missing my point. Everybody has to be free. If we do nothing else, we have the obligation to see to it that people have that right.
Is that why
even
there are 380,000 American troops in Vietnam, 10,000 miles from home?
Would you be interested in the military figures in Red China? I'm sure you know them far better than I do. We're running completely out of time. I would thank you very much for, and I use the word in quotes, enlightening us, Professor. Pardon. Now, I have just a couple of more I'd like to ask you. You're here on what type of visa?
A United States immigration visa.
Don't you have to have a sponsor?
Oh, what sort of a cross-examination is
well,
this?
Well, I'm just
what's
curious.
What's this got to do with China?
Do you have a who's
I
your sponsor?
I suggest you reserve your curiosity
well,
for the
I'm not
under
quite. Well, this is the subject. Who pays your bills for all of these speeches you make at all these colleges?
There are a great many people in the United States who are more interested in China and more open-minded about it than our friend Mr. Burke here. They are perfectly happy to pay my traveling expenses while I'm in this
would
country.
Would you have any affiliation with the Progressive Labor Party in this
no,
country?
No, I would not.
You have not been sponsored by them in any sense? You have no relationship or association with them?
I do not intend, Mr. McCarthy, to be subjected to an interrogation.
You know something? Once again, it gives me great pleasure to say that if I have undermined your credibility, that is a lie. You've done a beautiful job by yourself. Thank you for being here tonight, Professor.
We present now Eldridge Cleaver at California Hall. On November 21st, Eldridge Cleaver spoke at a meeting sponsored by the Eldridge Cleaver Defense Committee. originally scheduled at the Hall of Flowers in Golden Gate Park. The group's permit was canceled by city officials, and the meeting was finally held at California Hall in San Francisco. On November 26th, Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall refused to extend Eldridge Cleaver's liberty pending his upcoming trial, and his parole was technically reinstated as of November 27th. He failed to surrender himself on that date, and this is the last speech he made prior to his disappearance.
I should now like to introduce well-known author, critic, and lecturer, Eldridge Cleaver.
Everybody. Kind of stuck for words tonight. I don't know whether this is a hello or a goodbye. I talked to my parole officer today, and he told me that Wednesday, the 27th, he wanted me to call him up about 8:30 in the morning so that he could tell me where to meet him so that he could transport me to San Quentin. They want to have a parole revocation hearing, and I guess they think they have a right to do that. They certainly are proceeding as though they have a right. Having had some experience with them, I know that when they have you in their clutches, they proceed with what they want to do, whether they have a right or not. A lot of people don't know anything about the prison system. I think they look at prison officials the same way they look at cops, that in some sense they're the guardians of the law, that they're there to protect society, and that everything that they say is the truth, and that there's nothing wrong with what they're into, that there's nothing wrong with what they're doing. Well, I know, not so much from my own case, but from the cases of others that I've observed in the various prisons of the state of California, that there are a whole lot of people behind those walls who don't belong there, and that everybody behind those people yearn behind those walls to return to the free world, to return to society, to be free, and not to be returned to the penitentiary. Now, when I went into the penitentiary, I made the decision. I took a long look at myself, and I said, well, you've been walking this little trip a little too long. You're tired of it. It's very clear that what you had going for yourself before you came in was not adequate, so that while you're here, you're going to have to work with yourself, deal with yourself, so that when you get out of here, you can stay out, because it was pretty clear to me that that was my last go-around and that I could not relate to that anymore. So I guess I developed something of a social conscience. You know, I decided to come out here and to work with social problems, to get involved with the movement, and to make whatever contribution I possibly could. When I made that decision, I thought that the parole authorities, the prison officials, would be tickled pink with me. Yeah. because they were always telling me to do exactly that. They would tell me that I was selfish and that I only thought of myself, that why didn't I start doing something for other people, working with other people, relating to other people, and looking beyond the horizon of myself. So I did that, you know. And I want to just tell you this, that I've had more trouble. I've had more trouble out of parole officers and the Department of Correction simply because I've been relating to the movement than I had when I was committing robberies, rapes, and other things that I didn't get caught for. See? That's the truth. If I was on the carpet for having committed a robbery, well, there would be some conversation about that. There would be a few people uptight about that. But it seemed to be localized. It didn't seem to affect the entire prison system or the entire parole board. They didn't seem to have much time to even discuss it, you know? They run you through their meetings very, very briefly, you know? You feel that your case is not even being considered. But now I know that my case is constantly on their desk and that my parole officer, he doesn't have very much to do except keep track of me, you know? He wants to know where I go, how much money I make each month, where I'm living, when I'm going to go out of town, and to phone him up when I get back to town, ask him permission to do this and that. There's something more dangerous about attacking the pigs of the power structure verbally than it is if you walk into the Bank of America with a gun and attack it forthrightly, you know. They don't relate to that. They hate armed robbery with violence. Bankers, if you commit a robbery and there's no violence, well, they're mad at you, but they don't get too carried away. But if you walk into a bank with a gun and rip something off, the bankers start lobbying for a new law. Well, I don't know if there are any bankers in the audience tonight, you know? But I hope that there are. I hope that there's at least one or a friend of one or somebody who will carry a message to one. And I hope particularly that there's one here from the Bank of America. See? I heard today on the news that Brother Cesar Chavez has declared war on the Bank of America. See? The Bank of America is Alley-Oop Alley-Oto's bank. My wife told me this evening that she received a phone call from the Bank of America saying that they were going to repossess our car. Because we were 3 months behind in our payments. And that's not true, but I wish that I had never paid a penny for it. I wish that I could have just walked onto that lot and said, stick them up. Because that's how I felt about it. That's how I feel about it now. I don't relate to their system of credit. See it now, take it home, and pay later, but make sure you pay, you know? It was only out of consideration for the atmosphere that I would need in order to do the other things that I wanted to do that I didn't rip it off, or that I haven't walked into the Bank of America, or that I haven't walked into any other establishment and repossess the loot that they have in there, you see? So I don't know what they expect from me, you see? I haven't committed any crimes. I don't feel in the need of any rehabilitation. I don't feel any need of going back to Dirty Red's penitentiary. Ward Nelson, Big Red. The prison guards call him Big Red. The convicts call him Dirty Red. See? And he's sitting over there across the bay, and he's waiting for me. Because we have a little history of friction, and he doesn't like me. My parole officer doesn't like me. He tells the newspaper writers when they go down there, he tells them, well, yeah, I think he's a real nice fellow. I think he's making an excellent adjustment. And if it wasn't for this particular indictment that was brought against him, I would be perfectly willing to have him as my parolee from now on, you know? But what he's saying is this, that if you go down to the parole department and ask them to let you see my file, you will find one. You will find just one charge against me other than those lodged against me in Alameda County, which have yet to be adjudicated. I haven't gone to trial for those. I've pled not guilty for those. And the one legitimate charge they say that they have, it's entitled Failing to Cooperate with His Parole Agent. But the first time I saw that, I couldn't understand what it meant, because I leaned over backwards to cooperate with that punk, you know? So I asked him, just what does that mean? What's the substance of that? And he said, now, this is gonna really surprise you. He said, you remember when you went to New York to tape the David Susskind show? I said, yes, I remember doing that. You remember I told you that when you got back to give me a phone call and let me know that you were back in town? I said, yes, and I did that, didn't I? No, you didn't do it, and that's against the rules. See? And that's the only thing that they have in my file that is even debatable. All of the other things that they're hostile towards me for, they can't put them in the file because it's against the law. It's contrary to the Constitution, and they would be ashamed to write it down on paper and place it in my file. They probably have another file that they smuggle around amongst them, but they cannot come out and tell you one thing that I've done that would justify returning me to the penitentiary. So, I just have to say, that I didn't leave anything in that penitentiary except half of my mind and half of my soul, and that's dead there, and I have no use for it. It's theirs, they can have that, and that's my debt to them. That's my motherfucking thing. And they don't have anything coming, and everything they get from now on, they have to take, see? I believe this. I believe that our time has come, a point has been reached where a line just has to be drawn. Because the power structure of this country has been thoroughly exposed. There is no right on their side. And we know that they're moving against people for political purposes. Just as that buffoon Alioto refused to allow us to have this meeting in the Hall of Flowers, the People's Hall of Flowers, just as he refused to do that for political purposes, they're doing a lot of other things to a lot of other people, and I'm sure you know about that, but somehow and somewhere it just has to be stopped. There's a favorite line that I know about, and it says that There is a point where caution ends and cowardice begins. There is that point. Everybody's scared of the pigs and the power structure. They have reason to be concerned about them because they have these Gestapo forces that they can issue an order to, and they will come in with their clubs and their guns, and they will exterminate you if that's what it takes in order to carry out the will of their bosses. But I noticed that there are never really a whole lot of pigs on the scene. The only exception to this, in my experience, is New York City, where they seem to have, like, the streets crawling with human beings, and you see more pigs than you see people. Two on every corner and two in the middle of every block. Pigs. Occupying forces. Gestapo.